The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. A good Tuesday morning to you. Senator Tom Cotton joins me this morning. No doubt he missed the Ohio State-Michigan game, so we don't have to talk about that. Senator Cotton, I do want to talk with you about Apple and Twitter. Elon Musk has said today that Apple is considering removing Twitter from the App Store. How does that strike you? How would you respond to that?
Hugh, I think that would be a very ill-advised decision by Tim Cook and Apple. I understand that he may not care for Elon Musk. Maybe he's a little envious of Elon Musk's massive success as a businessman. But to remove a widely used social media app from Apple's App Store simply because he has political disagreements with Elon Musk or the direction he's taking Twitter would simply be inviting aggressive legislative and regulatory action in Washington.
Now, Senator, I note that you are a fairly frequent user of Twitter, as is your team over at the senator's office. Have you noticed any difference since Elon Musk took over? I have not. I haven't noticed a single thing different.
No, Hugh, the only difference I've noticed is a bunch of liberals predicting that Twitter is about to collapse into frozen dysfunction any moment now. And I think that was maybe 2 weeks ago, and it was predicted to happen a few days later. So the predictions are increasingly wrong. Maybe they're proven right, but I'd probably put my money on the guy that sends rockets to the moon.
I put the guy in who can land the rockets back on the pad, actually. That's the thing that impresses
even
me.
Even better.
So, Senator Cotton, in terms of what's going on, it's a moral panic among the left that they've lost control over a website that actually matters to the distribution of the news. That's all it is. But I do think I just am unaware of anything that has happened. When I see that hate speech, et cetera, is up on Twitter, I don't know if it is or not, but it doesn't matter to users unless they go looking for that stuff.
Hugh, this gets back to your point about the experience that most users have has not changed much. I guess if you're a liberal reporter trying to find obscure accounts, that you can then highlight and hold up as representative of your political adversaries, you might find it. But for most people who use social media to follow news in their community or their favorite sports teams or what their favorite reporters are publishing on a day-to-day basis, I don't think the experience has changed at all.
All right, I want to switch over to Georgia. I just talked to Ronna McDaniel. They've got 400 RNC staffers down there. Everybody is going to help out Herschel, but people need to know they got to vote early this week until Friday at 6 or next Tuesday. How important is a 50-50 Senate as opposed to a Democrat majority of 51-49, Tom Cotton?
Vitally important, Hugh. There's a lot of things that we can do in a 50-50 Senate to slow down, in some cases stop, the most extreme elements of the Biden agenda along with the House majority. Stop the most extreme nominees. You know, we've done that in a few cases, Hugh, where one Democratic senator balked, either publicly or privately. It's much harder to stop those radical left-wingers if it takes two Democratic senators bucking their own president. But even more important to you than control of the United States Senate is who will represent the people of Georgia for the next 6 years. This is about being Georgia's voice, and Herschel Walker will be a voice for sanity, for stable prices and a strong growing economy, for tough-on-crime policies, for a secure border, and a proud, strong America in the world. We know what Raphael Warnock will do. He has been a radical, radical left-wing ideologue and a rubber stamp for Joe Biden's agenda. So for the people of Georgia, this could not be a more pressing decision.
Have you pieced together why Republicans are disappointed yet, Senator? Obviously, I was thinking we were going to pick up 25 seats in the House, and we only got 9. That's on top of 14 in the previous cycle, so it's a majority, and it's a good majority. It's what Nancy Pelosi had, and I'm not part of the Beltway media bad-mouthing a House majority. We came up short in the Senate, but 50-50 is better than 51-49 by a lot, and the map is a lot better for us. What do you think happened? What's your prognosis of the disappointment?
Well, Hugh, at a high level, it's fairly clear what happened. We lost races that we maybe should have won or we hoped to win, is that we did not do a good enough job of winning over independent and moderate or swing voters. That's very clear. In those races where we won big elections, like Ron DeSantis and Marco Rubio in Florida, or Mike DeWine in Ohio, even in cases where we lost races, but we had candidates running far ahead of the top of the ticket, like Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania or Tiffany Smiley in Washington, they did a very good job of appealing to those independent and moderate voters. I think it's probably still a little too early to tell. You still want to reconcile exit poll returns with what happened in each state, and there's probably some variation in each state. Each state is its own campaign, but we need to do a better job of appealing to independent and swing voters. This is not an election that we lost because our voters didn't turn out. It's not an election we lost because the Democrats had some kind of surge in turnout. It was an election we lost on the margins in certain places because of a failure to persuade those independent swing voters to back the Republican candidate.
Now, Senator, you are not yourself running for president in 2024, so I can ask you this. You have a fellow Arkansan who is, Asa Hutchinson. Are you going to get involved in the 2024 race? Are you going to wait and tell us later who you're behind, or are you just going to sit it out and support the nominee?
Well, Hugh, I have elected not to be a candidate myself, so I don't plan to be a pundit or a strategist on anyone else's behalf. I have no plans to be involved for any candidate at the moment, and I don't expect to be involved anytime soon. It's always possible that as the race develops, I might. I did not in 2016. You know, I stayed neutral in the primaries. I was willing to help or advise anyone who sought my help or advice because I want to have a strong Republican nominee. And then, of course, I backed the former president once he secured the nomination. But right now, I have no plans or expectation. I wish all the candidates very well. We have a lot of problems to solve, and I know that we're going to have a lot of strong candidates in the race trying to solve those problems for our voters.
Now, J.D. Vance, after he won, put out a very interesting op-ed that the Republicans have a small donor disadvantage. Do you agree with that, and how do we remedy that if that's the case?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that question. And J.D. Vance's essay was a very worthwhile read for anyone who wants to know what it's like to have been a candidate and struggled against this massive money machine. There are a lot of reasons for that, Hugh. One thing is the Democrats have just been at it for very long. You know, Act Blue is the remnant of Howard Dean's 2004 presidential campaign. There's some technical reasons for it. I think there's some behavioral reasons about, you know, what our candidates and campaigns have done in recent years, but it's something that we really need to address. We have a lot of great voters, a lot of great supporters, people who will pitch in $5 or $10 if you ask them, but we've got to give them a compelling reason to do so. We need to give them the infrastructure, the technical infrastructure that makes it very easy and trustworthy to do so as well. You can raise all the money you want for super PACs, but at the end of the day, a candidate's own money is much more valuable than any outside organization because they can control the way it's spent and the message that are communicated, and they get the lowest advertising rates, and no other organization does.
That was the genuine reveal for me in JD's essay. I did not realize that super PACs did not get the rate card that the candidates get. And in the radio business, we're very aware you have to offer your lowest rate to every candidate, but you don't have to offer your lower rate to the super PAC business. But I didn't know that. Sweeping generalization time, Senator. I have this morning, because it's Giving Tuesday, the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I have given to Angel Tree, the banner of which is over at the top of HughHewitt.com, Semper Fi Fund, Fisher House, and the Gary Sinise Foundation. That's because I lost the Ohio State-Michigan bet to Larry, though I contribute to all three of those organizations as well. So we are in the giving mode on Giving Tuesday, but we also have a couple of churches to support, one on each coast. Do you think that maybe Democrats lead in small donors because a lot of the Republican small donors are tithing first?
I think that's a real possibility, Hugh. I mean, regular churchgoers certainly tend to vote Republican, and they understandably put their own churches first for political giving, as I think is appropriate. It's also possible to you that just inflation bites our voters a little bit more than it does on Democratic voters, is that, our voters who are kind of normal, working class, two-parent families, struggle when inflation is at 8% year over year in a way that wealthy Democratic donors, and not just, you know, Hollywood tycoons or Wall Street tycoons, but, two-couple income and the Washington, D.C. area, where one's a diversity consultant and one's a green energy lobbyist. They just don't have the same kind of pinch of inflation that a lot of our Republican supporters across the country have.
Now, Senator, I want to close by talking to you about employee donations to midterm candidates by party. Netflix, 99.6% Democrat. Twitter, 98.7% Democrat. Airbnb, 97.8% Democrat. Apple, 97.5% Democrat. It goes on down. Finally, we get to Oracle. At the bottom of the list, it's only 66% Democrat, 33% Republican. To what do you attribute big tech's overwhelmingly Democratic bias?
Well, Mark Zuckerberg once testified in front of a Senate committee, Silicon Valley is an extremely left-wing place. And I think those numbers just bear that out. I think there's something of a selection bias of people who want to go and work in that kind of environment. I mean, you can see it there in Oracle as well, still predominantly Democratic, but nowhere near what these social media companies are, people who want to kind of control access to information and influence in their society versus the kind of people that go to a company like Oracle and want to build something. I just think there's kind of a self-reinforcing cycle. And it gets back to your first point about Apple threatening to remove Twitter from the App Store. They are hysterical that one of the main avenues for accessing information in our country may be in the hands of a political rival or just someone who actually believes in free speech or who believes in transparency and wants to reveal what happened with the Hunter Biden laptop story.
And so I don't, that is so, it's not 70-30, it's not 80-20, it's 99.5% at most of these places. And I begin to wonder whether or not that shows up in ways large and small in the code and in the algorithm. Do you think it does?
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's much question that it does, Hugh. And it also just kind of it perpetuates their worldview. You know, the old joke about the Harvard professor who couldn't believe that Richard Nixon won re-election because everyone she knew voted for George McGovern.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that there's one half of 1% of the employees at Netflix that would even dare contribute to a Republican for risk of being exposed and canceled and driven out of their job.
Well, they might. They might do it below $100. If you're below $100, it doesn't get published. We'll see about that. Senator Cotton, thank you for joining me. We'll talk to you next week. By the way, do you expect there to be a CR for the entire year or for 1 month?
Well, I hope there's not. We need the Democrats to actually take seriously defense funding. Even if there's not a full year funding bill for the entire government, I think we should do that for the Department of Defense, obviously. Our common defense has to come as the first priority of the national government.
Now, from your lips to the Democratic ears. Thank you, Senator Tom Cotton.
Hey, everyone. This is Dwayne Patterson, producer of The Hugh Hewitt Show. I've known for a while now that there's been far too much of me here in the studio, and I finally needed to do something about my weight. My excuse was always that I couldn't follow a plan with the crazy schedule that I keep. I heard about PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition and how they customize their program for each client, and I decided to call. This was no problem for Rachel and the PhD team. They had me map out what my day looks like and created a plan to follow. And so far, I've lost 16 pounds already and I'm just 2 weeks in on the way to my goal of losing 45. Call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900 and make your appointment for your consultation. The plan is simple. It's based on science and nutrition. There's no pills or injections, and they even include 80% of your food if you want it. Call them right now at 864-644-1900 or find them online at myphdweightloss.com. And tell them you heard about it from Dwayne, the producer Hugh actually has on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Sorry, let me get serious about the lame duck. Are you going to get a 1 month deal or a 13 month deal? My friends in the Pentagon and the military tell me they need a 13 month deal in order to buy stuff and make plans. But I'm not sure your Democratic colleagues will do a responsible 13 month deal.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I think it'd be a short term deal. Well, I think what's so frustrating for even those members like me who work a lot on defense issues, if we're on an authorizing committee, like the Armed Services Committee, at this point in time, a lot of this is a negotiation purely among the appropriators, the people that actually dole out the money. So we have limited ability to impact those negotiations. But I certainly hope that we give the Pentagon the resources it needs. And this stop-start budgeting is so counterproductive. It's so destructive. I mean, just the cumulative impact of continuing resolutions, of budget uncertainty is billions and billions of dollars worth of lost revenue for the Defense Department. It means you can't make investment in new resources, and particularly at a time when we're seeing increasing threats from Russia, from Iran, from China. We need to be doing everything possible to restore deterrence before we find ourselves embroiled in yet another conflict.
So I assume Ken Calvert is deep into this as the ranking member for the Republicans on the Defense Appropriations. Is he staying there, by the way? Is he going to be the chairman of the Defense Subcommittee on Appropriations?
He will be the chairman of the Defense Subcommittee on Appropriations. So
that's very good news. That's very good news. But now the question becomes, I had dinner last night with a young China scholar and Mandarin speaker. They're all juiced up about this China committee. And I said, I know it's coming. I think it's coming. Have you heard when it's going to be announced and who's going to be on it? Mike Gallagher.
I have not. It's entirely soon to be Speaker McCarthy's decision. One of the things I hope we can do is take advantage of the lame duck session to start laying the groundwork for the committee, because there's a lot that needs to be done so you can hit the ground sprinting in January, hiring a staff, formulating a plan for hearings, really kind of understanding the mission of the committee, what its left and right lateral limits are, what its jurisdiction is. So while the committee won't be officially instantiated until January, until the new Congress, I think we need to take advantage of the next month to get everything ready to go so you don't lose January, you don't lose that first quarter, and you can make the most of the beginning of the next Congress.
You know, this is, by the way, people who are going to join that committee are all going to be Mandarin speaking, super intelligent people. And I know you'll, if you're on it, you'll help add to that staff. I would like to come and talk to them at the beginning, to the staff, about how to message into the media what they're doing. And I hope you will put a schedule of hearings out like every Wednesday for the next 2 years. We're going to have a China committee meeting so that people can plan and go and begin to develop a basis. But that requires planning in December to launch in January. Have you heard anything about it?
I have not, Hugh. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on in terms of rules for the next Congress. This week, the steering committee will meet to vote on various things in terms of regional representatives. The steering committee, they have debates over, whether people are going to get waivers to be able to be chairman for certain committees. So a ton of moving parts in the conference right now. But again, I'm hopeful we'll be able to make some quick progress. Completely agree with you on the importance of getting the messaging aspect right. I think a lot of what this Select Committee on China can do, in addition to making sure that good China-related legislation doesn't fall through the committee cracks where there's shared jurisdiction, it just kind of explain to the American people why this matters. Connect the dots between, Taiwan, the first island chain, and everyday lives for Americans and what it is we're up against, to tell a compelling story to the American people about why they should care about the threat posed by the Chinese Communist Party. That's something absolutely essential. It's going to require a very creative sort of media mind. And so I will take you up on that offer if I have any say in the committee going forward.
Yeah, to me, the objective of the committee ought to be laid down at the beginning, which is to educate and inform the American people the threat posed to their future and their children and grandchildren's future by the Chinese Communist Party. End of mission statement. To inform them. You might legislate, you might recommend legislation, but it's to inform them. I want to play for you a clip yesterday of John Kirby at the White House, Congressman Gallagher. And he's a good guy. I think Admiral Kirby does his best, but he got asked about the demonstrations in China. Cut number two.
We don't have a preview of some sort of statement to read out to you today. We've been very clear about our concerns over the military's domination there. And their practice and their policies, particularly the way they treat political prisoners. But I don't have a statement for you today about that particular issue.
On China, is it the U.S.'s assessment that these protests we've seen are widespread, or are they perhaps more isolated incidents that are being amplified by social media?
I don't think that we know a whole lot more about the geographic location, size, scale, and scope of them than what you're learning as well through social media and through traditional media. It's not like we have, I think, a finer sense of insight than what's already out there in the public sphere.
All right, so Congressman Gallagher, John Kirby's a good guy. The Admiral does his best. He doesn't know how many demonstrations there are. Nobody knows. I see things on Twitter. The China Committee ought to be out as the one-stop shopping center, for we are aware of 44 different demonstrations involving more than 100 people in the arrest. They ought to know that the Chinese Communist Party abrogated their deal with the Roman Catholic Church, appointed a bishop. I mean, they ought to just be the clearinghouse. Is that the mission? 100%.
That is the mission, Hugh, to really coordinate China policy and messaging across committees. And you said something critical when you explained your draft version of the mission statement. You said the threat posed by the Chinese Communist Party. I think part of our messaging, taking a page from Reagan's masterful ideological warfare playbook, has to be to constantly differentiate between the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese people. And we stand with the Chinese people against the party. And right now we're seeing what the party does to oppress its own people because they fear their own people more than anything else. And so I was disappointed in sort of the tepid messaging coming out of the White House yesterday. I think the president should explicitly support the brave Chinese protesters. They're showing tremendous courage. It's time for us to show some courage of our own. We need to make clear that CCP officials that are found to be responsible for any violent suppression of protesters will be subject to global Magnitsky sanctions. We should have already sanctioned, the network of Chinese scientists and party officials who are responsible in the COVID cover-up, the Chinese Academy of Science, the Wuhan Institute of Virology. We haven't done that because this White House sort of constantly fears offending China and is still subject to the delusion that we can work with China on climate change. So there's a lot of ways in which the Select Committee on China can really hold this administration's feet to the fire, expose some contradictions in our national security strategy, and ultimately build a bipartisan, strong foundation for U.S. foreign policy that will last in the next few decades.
Yeah, they released, I don't know if this is true, I've read it online, iOS 16.1.1 has been altered to allow the Chinese Communist Party to manipulate the iPhone in China to suppress anti-regime info. If that is true, I would expect the Select Committee on China, the SCC, we'll call it, not the SEC, which is just about as evil as the CCP, but the SCP, Standing Committee on China, to come out and just inform people. I think you'll get C-SPAN and others that will just carry the hearings, Congressman, because the American people genuinely are interested.
Yeah, I think, and if you have it at a set time, like you mentioned earlier, Wednesday, I would put it in the evening so it doesn't get buried. I mean, in the right time. Regarding the reports about Apple, there was also a report that they reduced airdrop functionality in China. And it should just go without saying that any American technology company that sides with the CCP by aiding the regime against protesters will have to answer to Congress why it's prioritizing profits over the human rights of the Chinese people. So
I know this is going to upset you.
We need to figure it out.
I know you sleep in till noon, but if you do it, you get up once a week for me, and that's nice. But if you do it at 10 a.m., whatever comes out of the hearing is available for the nightly news and the cable channels. So you're doing it at night. It guarantees that no one will know about it. So I'm here to help you because you're from Wisconsin and you don't understand media. Because there is none up there, right?
Why I need your media advice. I'm just a policy nerd from Green Bay, Wisconsin, a simple Marine, Hugh. This is why we need you involved.
You are a simple Marine. Let me ask you, by the way, does Lake Superior, in fact, freeze?
I'm a Lake Michigan guy. Superior is just strategic depth as far as I'm concerned. the lesser Great Lakes. What care I about the lesser Great Lakes?
Well, we're not talking much about anything related to that team up north this week because they done us dirty. And by the way, Ohio in the Final Four if USC or TCU loses?
I have no clue here. What happened with the Ohio-Michigan game? Remind me.
Ohio here? State lost in an unfortunate display of coaching. Ryan Day's a great coach. I don't want him to go anywhere, but I would not have called that game. C.J. Stroud was our weapon. We didn't use him. Sort of like having Ron Dayne and not letting him run the ball. But you wouldn't know much about playoff championship games, would you?
No. Not this year. I have no leg to stand on.
You know, thank you, Congressman Mike Gallagher. Follow him on Twitter at Rep Gallagher. He'll be back next week with more no news on the China Committee. Honestly, every time I ask him a question, I never get any news. It's Giving Tuesday. I began the morning by sending $1,000 off from the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I to Angel Tree. That's 40 kids that we're taking care of. The Angel Tree banner is at the top of HughHewitt.com, and I hope that you will on Giving Tuesday get your kids around you and say, we're going to take care of someone else's Christmas. We're going to be a secret Santa to a child whose mom or dad is in jail. Now, it's probably likely that your kids aren't thinking about that. They might be in the backseat of the car right now. There are 1.5 million children in America who have one or both parents in prison or jail. Sometimes you do jail for misdemeanor up to a year in the local jail. And it's really tough. And some people are serving life sentences and they're never going to get out, but they try and stay connected. Prison fellowships work on the inside with the inmates to prepare them to return to life on the outside. But in the meantime, life on the outside means their kids, and their kids need you to step up. And Jim Ackerman cut a special message for us. I want you to hear it. Here's Jim Ackerman.
I'm James Ackerman, the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship. On behalf of our entire staff, and more importantly, the prisoners' families you bless, I want to personally thank you for your donation to our Salem Radio Network Angel Tree campaign. Thanks for opening your heart and your wallet this Christmas season.
It's a great thing. And I will never forget Senator Inhofe, who's retiring this year, calling in and saying, I want to donate for five kids, but I want to know their names. I want to be in touch with them. And I thought, you know, senators are just people, too. And if you think about children out there and the circumstances that attend having a parent in prison, you'll be moved and you'll donate to Angel Tree. Thank you in advance for that. America, Bones were high. Canada Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway on this November the 29th in the year of our Lord 2022, joined by United States Senator Marsha Blackburn from the state of Tennessee. Good morning, Senator. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you had a good one.
We had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Lots of time with the grandkids and family and, pardon me, lots of fun. And now we're back to D.C. and back to work.
Lame duck session. I want to ask you about the BOTS Act and a couple other things. But first, I use the iPhone. I've used the iPhone forever. Elon Musk pointed out last night that Apple is threatening to remove Twitter from their iPhone store, their app store, in which case I'll just throw my iPhone away and get an Android. What do you think about that? If Elon Musk is so radioactive that Tim Cook that he would drop it from the app store.
As I put up on Twitter last night, I think the American people should be able to determine what goes on their phone, not Tim Cook. And I have legislation, the Open App Market Act, and this would allow people to download directly from the app developer, whether it is the app itself or all of the upgrades. And you, the important thing about this is you remove that gatekeeper. Plus, Apple is taking about 30% of the profit from all of these apps. So allow people to download directly from the developer to get their upgrades directly from the developer to communicate directly with them and take the middleman out of it. Because they're taking the profit and they're controlling what apps people are going to be able to have on their phones. And there's this thing they call sideloading, which is apps not approved by Apple or by Google onto those phones. So even if you had an Android phone, you would be going through the Google App Store. And people are tired of this. They say, look, this is not an infant industry anymore. We want to be able to have that choice of what goes on our phones. We don't like paying these fees because the fees are not going to the developers and innovators. They're going into Apple's pocket. So this is a revenue source for them. So they're going to fight Elon Musk on this because he's the most high profile of the individuals that have taken Apple own, and they're afraid people are going to say, hey, you know, I agree with Elon on this. I don't want to have to pay all of this to Apple. And it's why my legislation, which has made it out of Judiciary Committee and is ready for a vote on the floor, it's why Chuck Schumer needs to push it forward so that people can have a choice. So you break up this monopoly or biopoly that exists around Google and Apple and the different apps that you can utilize. Wouldn't you rather download the app for your banking service or for your physician directly from them instead of having to go through
Apple
or Google?
It makes sense to me. I'm glad it came out of committee, and I hope the committee stay 50-50 to do that. Herschel Walker needs to win. Early voting is open until Friday at 5 or 6 or something like that. Senator Blackburn. How do you folks feel about Herschel's race right now?
Herschel is doing a great job in his race, and people that want to support him and be sure we maintain this 50-50 Senate need to go to teamherschel.com and support Herschel Walker. He is working hard. He's out there every day. He's continuing with his bus tour. Governor Kemp is fully behind Herschel Walker. He has his organization running Herschel's Get Out the Vote. And I think that Herschel is going to pull this out because the people of Georgia do not want someone like Raphael Warnock, who has voted with President Joe Biden 97% of the time. And Hugh, I don't think the people of Georgia, my friends in Georgia, people that I know in Georgia have worked with, they don't support Joe Biden 97% of the time, but that's the vote that is being cast for them in the U.S. Senate.
So that is a week from today, but early voting through Friday. Now, talk to me about the BOTS Act. What is that, Senator Blackburn? Another one of the laws that you've drawn up with your team.
Yes, and when I was in the House, we passed the BOTS Act. And this would give the FTC the tools to go after these bots. It would give entities like Live Nation and Ticketmaster the tools to go after these people with the bots that go in as soon as the window opens for a concert, for a sporting event, and they scoop up all the available tickets. This is an algorithmic issue. And as I was telling one of my colleagues yesterday, this is not an antitrust issue. It doesn't matter if you have one, two, or 10 providers of tickets. The issue is the bots that scoop them up and then fans of the performer, like a Taylor Swift, like others that are out there on the big tours, or like sporting events, when you get to the Super Bowl, it's going to be dealing with these bots and blocking them, allowing the FTC to go after the purveyor of these bots that are scooping up these tickets and then putting them on the resale market like StubHub for twice the price. And when I was in the House and then Chuck Schumer in the Senate, we did this legislation. The FTC just needs to enforce this thing. And make
now, I don't understand why we care. Now, I'm not a Taylor Swift fan, so I didn't get locked out of Taylor Swift. But there have been a lot of concerts where I've, you know, I always wait for the aftermarket because I'm not going to sit around on the phone and try and call 55,000 times. The aftermarket, are you telling me the aftermarket is controlled by simple algorithmic giants that snatch up all the tickets and then maximize their value? Because that does seem efficient to me. Where am I wrong?
There are your bots that go in, they scoop the tickets, and then they put them into that secondary market. And maybe it was a $60 ticket that they're selling for $120 or $150. So if you really want to go see that game or you really want to hear that performer live, then you're going to have to pay that to go. Now, this is where it affects a lot of our people in Nashville with the tours. So you put up somebody that the bots come in, they scoop most of the tickets. People go to a resale site to buy those tickets. They're paying $300 for a ticket that they could have gotten for $100 if the bot hadn't beat them out when the window opened. And then they go to the concert. They don't have money for merchandise. And a lot of our performers out of Nashville that are doing these tours, they make a lot of their money on merchandise. And so it cripples the market for them. Plus, it disenfranchises their fans who can't get that ticket in the first place.
Now, you know, I have to think this through because I'm kind of in the view that markets ought to be allowed to work and that the secondary market is what always ought to be. You know, I would charge movie theaters by the price. I would charge doctor appointments by the market. People could bid for everything by the market except an emergency room. So they spend more money on tickets. They can't spend more money on the artist. The artist isn't doing poorly if they've got a secondary market that strong, are they, Senator?
what is happening, though, you're saying the market ought to be able to control it, and you're right. But see, what is happening is when the bots go in and buy all of those tickets, you then have altered the market because you've blocked people out of the marketplace. They can't go in. Like I said, whether it is the merger of Ticketmaster Live Nation and you have one seller or you have two sellers or you have 10 sellers, the problem is the bots that go in and scoop up all of those tickets, and then you find them on the resale. Now, there are legitimate uses for resale. It's people that have season tickets to sporting events and can't use them for a certain game. It is people that bought a ticket for a concert and they want to sell it because they're not going to be able to get to that concert. And so there is a reason for that. But getting these bots that are blocking people out of being able to make a purchase and eliminating them. Think about it like this. What would happen if you went to the store, to the grocery store, and the bots had scooped up all of the baby formula or all of the apples or all of the chicken, and you just couldn't get any of that unless you went to a resale, a secondary market, where the price was twice what you thought it would be?
Well, I would expect another market to pop up then, but we'll continue to look at the Bots Act. I'm going to get every Taylor Swift person mad at me, but it just seemed to me that that was the efficient distribution of tickets to the people willing to buy the most. But I understand some people don't want to pay that. We'll talk more about that after the break. Senator Blackburn, always good to talk to you. Have a great holiday season ahead of you. D.C. is full of cheer and Christmas lights. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt, and listen up if you like to go on cruises. This year, we are back with Regent Seven Seas Cruises for an unrivaled experience with every luxury included. Join us for 14 glorious days on the Mediterranean, departing September 7th, 2023. We're excited to include special guest Guy Benson, senior politics editor at Town Hall and star of Fox News. Enjoy the sweet life with gourmet dining, unlimited fine wines, premium spirits, most shore excursions, and free unlimited Wi-Fi. Arrive in style with free business class airfare, starting in London and ending in magnificent Monte Carlo. Along with exclusive special events focused mostly on 2024, there's an exclusive private sale available only until November 30th. Don't wait. Book your cabin today. Call our friends at Frosch Studio City at 818-853-8536. That's 818-853-8536. Or go to HughHewitt.com and click on the cruise banner for more information. That's 818-853-8536 or HughHewitt.com. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway. It's Giving Tuesday. I've already made my donations to Angel Tree Prison Fellowship, the Semper Fi Fund, also Fisher House, and the Gary Sinise Foundation. I hope you'll join us. The Angel Tree banner is at the top of HughHewitt.com. I am joined by our good friend, Ronna McDaniel, chairwoman of the Republican National Committee. It is election week in Georgia. Early voting is going on in Georgia. I want to check in with the chairwoman about that. Good morning, Ronna McDaniel. Welcome back.
Good morning. Always great to be with you, Hugh.
How's it going in Georgia? What's it look like to you on the early get out the vote effort?
You know, I'm here today. I'm going to be knocking doors and with Herschel. It is all about get out the vote. You know, the Democrats went to court and they got early voting extended, and so Republicans have to get out and vote in the next 6 days so that we can win this seat.
Now, there's a pretty good organization in Georgia. I know the governor is working with you. How good do you feel about the actual go and get people and remind them that it's a week from today?
That's the biggest challenge, especially in rural Georgia where they don't have Wi-Fi, making sure they know that the date is December 6th. They can actually start early voting today. And that's why we're here. The RNC put 400 staff on the ground. And I know Kemp is all in, and Herschel's been raising money, and the Senate committee, everybody's all in to make sure that people know to go vote, because it is an unusual day, and that's probably the biggest challenge.
Yeah, and you got Georgia in the hunt for the SEC. I mean, getting people's attention in December has got to be hard, but I'm glad to hear you have 400 staff on the ground in Georgia. Are you going to try and play primarily in Atlanta, or do you go out to the rural area? We're on in Savannah and Athens and Macon. We're on all over Georgia, and I keep reminding people, go and vote early. There's nothing wrong with voting early. Bank it and then watch football this week.
Yeah, bank it and watch football. That's exactly right. We need to know how many votes we need to go get, too. So it helps us know that vote count if people go vote early. You know, Northwest Georgia is going to be really critical as well. So we need the whole state. You know, Warnock will depend more on Atlanta, and we need rural Georgia to turn out for Herschel to win.
All right, we will keep hammering that. Now I want to turn to the RNC. I've got a column coming out in the Washington Post in which I just flatly declare you've been a great chairwoman. You ought to stay. I think you're willing to stay. You have to persuade a majority of 168 people that you should be returned to chairwoman. I know a couple other people would like the job. What do you think about that, Ronnie McDaniel? You are running again. Do you think you have the votes?
I do. Thank you, Hugh, and thanks for your support and understanding what the RNC does with voter registration and these community centers. There's really been changes in the past 2 years to the RNC and election integrity, and I want to keep that going, especially as we're heading into a critical presidential and Senate election where we can take the Senate back and we have to keep the House. So I said I would run if I had the majority of the support of the members. I already have 102 members that have signed a letter supporting me. I have more support than that. And I'm humbled by that, and I want to continue doing this job.
Well, what I explained to people earlier, because I guess Governor Noem said she would like to have a change, and I like Kristi Noem, but I don't know that anyone really understands. This is a blocking and tackling operation. This is not glam. You are out there talking to volunteers every week, and running an RNC is not a glam job. Reince is a good friend of mine. It's not a glam job. It's a hardworking job, and you don't rearrange deck chairs. You keep it moving forward.
There's a lot of flying. I'm a million miler on Delta, that's for sure. Reince obviously supported me, which I'm really humbled by as well, a former chair who did a great job. But it's also a lot of a foundation and infrastructure. And so voter registration starts now. I mean, part of the reason we did so well in North Carolina is because we registered 70,000 new voters. The reason we did so well in Florida is because we took the lead in voter registration for the first time ever with more Republicans registered. But that started the day after the 2020 election, and that's starting right now. And I just don't want to pull up stakes heading to a critical presidential and Senate year and keeping back the House. And the RNC, I think, was a net positive in this election, especially where our community centers were, which is brand new for the RNC, in races like Monica De La Cruz or Juan Ciscovani, where we had these community centers. We did exceptionally well, Michelle Steele in California, and we need to keep that going.
Juan Ciscovani will be a regular guest of mine as the representative of the freshman class. I always pick one. Last year it was Ashley Hinson, the last couple of years. This year it'll be Juan Ciscovani for the next couple of years. Bring him on occasionally. And Tucson's a tough win. That was a necessary win. We're at 222. Yeah, I would have liked a little bit more, but a win is a win is a win. A majority is a majority is a majority. And you've won two elections in a row in the House. Now we have a new map. As you look at that new map, are you already lining up your targets for 2024?
Yeah, I think there's some things that have to happen. I think we go back to the courts in North Carolina and Ohio. We flipped the Supreme Courts in both of those states, and their redistricting maps were not settled yet. So I think we go back there and maybe actually try and pick up more seats. And then we start recruiting. Kevin McCarthy did a great job recruiting. We have a fantastic freshman class coming in. And then the Senate map looks much better for us. So Ohio, West Virginia, and Montana are going to be three of the top targets to pick up the Senate in 2024.
I agree. And you know, Montana always mystifies me how John Tester wins. But Sherrod Brown will be vulnerable. When Sherrod won 6 years ago, it's sort of coincident with the big revolution in the country and the realignment. J.D. winning by 8 points. I don't know if it's going to be Bernie Moreno or Matt Dolan. There are going to be a lot of people running in Ohio, but it's important. You're right. The Ohio Supreme Court has flipped. Their map will be approved. The North Carolina Supreme Court has flipped. I think that should give you a couple of seat advantage heading into the cycle.
I do, too. And they had their maps in flux. So flipping those two Supreme Courts was really, really critical. But Ohio has become redder. I mean, the one thing you were seeing is some states are becoming redder. Iowa, we flipped everything, right? We won the Zach Nunn seat and beat Sidney Acme. Ohio, Florida, North Carolina. But we also need to remember, and this isn't part of the analysis after this election, how do we continue to bring independence our way in some of these states that didn't go redder? Michigan, abortion was on the ballot. We know Democrats are going to put abortion on the ballot everywhere for 2024. So we've got to be prepared, and that starts today.
It does. And the messaging has to be that the RNC is there for every candidate across the spectrum. We've got moderate pro-life people, and we've got hardcore pro-life people, and everybody in between. It's pro-life party. but there are differences of opinion. I know you don't intend to arbitrate those differences, but to hear them all and to reflect the party. Am I right about that?
You are. And in a post-Dobbs world, and with Democrats putting millions and millions behind their messaging on abortion, we can't afford to pretend this isn't an issue that doesn't exist. We've been a pro-life party for a long time. We need to be able to talk about it and then push back on the Democrats and their extreme positions with, you know, gender selection or due date abortions, because most of the country's in the middle and we need to find consensus, and Republicans need to get conversant on this. And some of the races Democrats pummeled our candidates, and our candidates didn't push back. Of course, we support life-saving care for a woman getting a who had a miscarriage or an ectopic pregnancy, but we can't just ignore this issue. The Democrats are going to continue to use this as a wedge issue, and we've got to push back.
You know, Ron, I have not heard anyone use the term due date abortion before. I always like when something strikes my ear as appropriate. Due date abortion is one of those terms I've never heard it before. Is that original to you, or did that come out of the pro-life movement?
The pro-life movement. I wish I could say it was original. I'd be a true politician if I said it was mine, but no, I've heard it from Marjorie Denenfelter and others, and it's really something that the majority of the civilized world is very against, right? So we don't think that 9 months is the right way to go, and that's not where our country should be.
And that's where California is and where Michigan is now, and where I think a bunch of the radical
Colorado
states are.
Yep.
Colorado, but we are not there. So Ron McDaniel, going back to Georgia, in terms of the election, I assume every single ad is a Warnock ad or a Herschel ad. I assume people are saturated. Do you still need money down there? Is there going to be a good recount effort? Have you got the lawyers on site in the event that we have funny business in any of these counties?
Yeah, absolutely. We can use money. Go to Herschel's, WinRed, go to GOP.com, wherever you feel comfortable giving money. Listen, Warnock has a significant money advantage. The Democrats can print money. And I will say, Republicans, their interest in this race has been waning. And we absolutely need money just to do SMS texting to remind people about the election day. I know over Thanksgiving, I spent the whole time on the phone to raise close to $1 million for a mail program for Herschel, because his money hasn't come in at the level that he needs to compete against Warnock. Schumer just put $8 million more in, and the Democrats absolutely have a cash advantage in this race.
Now, you know, it's interesting, though. There is a point of diminishing returns. It's only about reminding people that you've got to vote by Tuesday and that you can vote this week. Do they count the early vote early down there, Ron and McDaniel, so it will be released first thing as polls close on Tuesday?
You know, they do, and we do know that about over 100,000 people have voted already. So we're 180,000 people have already voted. So it's gonna be a race to get all of our votes out. And Warnock has his vote concentrated at the Atlanta DMA, which means they have more awareness, and we need to get that rural Georgia aware of this election.
So everyone, call your friends in Georgia, tell them to vote earlier, vote next Tuesday. Ronnie McDaniel, thank you for joining me, Madam Chair. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Don't go anywhere, America. Unless you're in Georgia, go find your early voting district and get that vote for Herschel in. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house, or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.